Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
This is the Toffee Web Podcast.
Another Everton corner. And again from McNeil over Vicario. Goal stands, and we're back at Everton 1, Tottenham 1. And I'm now hearing that goal has been credited to Jack Harrison. Idrissa Gueye to win it back. That's Dragusin again. On Beto again. This time Everton do get their free kick. Temperatures are rising at the end here. Can they make anything of the set play? In from Garner. Oh, it was a Tottenham header that got there and in with Branthwaite. They have got their goal in the 94th minute. Jared Branthwaite. And Everton have got it back to 2-2.
It's a massive result for us. Obviously going down early in the game. I think we showed a real team mentality to get back into it and then going down again. But I think that's what we've done this season. You know, we're fighting right to the end in these games and we're giving ourselves the best possible chance of picking up points.
I've got to be honest, there's a lot of good comes out of that performance and we're stretched to the limit here, you know, and everyone played their part. The subs came on and made a difference. The mentality was fantastic and the crowd as well. So when it's connected like that, then I always say we can be very competitive, I believe.
Hello, Blues, and welcome to the latest edition of the Toffee Web Podcast, coming to you in the wake of Everton's 2-2 draw with Tottenham Hotspur at Goodison Park, and in the lead-up to perhaps the most feared and dreaded fixture on the calendar, alongside perhaps the Anfield derby, and that is the trip to Manchester City on Saturday. The point against Spurs maintained the Toffees' unbeaten run in the Premier League since the turn of the year, adding another point to a slowly increasing tally, but we are, of course, still in the relegation zone, and barring a miracle at the weekend at the Etihad, that situation probably won't change soon. At least not until Everton have what I think we'd all agree is a better shot at registering their first league win of 2024 against Crystal Palace under the lights on the 19th. To chew it all over, on this episode, I'm joined by esteemed Evertonian and author Paul McParland. As Paul, great to have you back on. How are you, my friend?
Fine, thank you, Lyndon. Thanks for having me on the pod today. And yeah, as ever with Everton, lots of things to talk about, lots of things to view, lots of things to discuss. And it's always interesting times at Goodison these days. But it certainly was a quite an enjoyable experience at Goodison Park on Saturday.
Well, let's start with that Spurs game. Our third successful draw in the league, salvaged at the death by Jared Brathwaite's first Goodison goal. When it looked as though it was going to be Richarlison's day in the wrong team colours, if you can call what Spurs were wearing a colour. Overall, how did you see it? A fair result?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day it was a fair result. I thought we were the better team in the first half. I thought we were quite unlucky to be trailing at half-time. The first... After the restart, I thought we sat back a little bit too much for maybe the first 20, 25 minutes or so. And then I thought the substitutions had a positive effect on Everton's impetus. And towards the end, I think Tottenham were hanging on dearly. And, we were delighted to get the point. It's always tempered by the fact you're celebrating, but you just know that it's going to go so far and you're just never quite sure whether it's going to stand or not. Which makes the experience watching live football incredibly frustrating at times. And even more so when you think the people watching at home on TV know the VAR decision before you in the stadium know, which is always quite annoying. I'm a paying customer and I should know first what's going on before the armchair fan. But it was good to see us come back from having been behind twice, which I think is the first time we've done that this season. I thought the resilience of the team was quite commendable. And I would say, Richarlison, you just knew he was going to score against it. It just went without saying. But I thought tactically, Sean Dyche doesn't particularly get praise for his tactical innovation, but that him and his coaches had obviously decided there was a weak point to work on there with Tottenham. And they certainly, they tried and tried again to exploit that potential weakness, and it certainly paid dividends in the end. Overall, quite pleased with the draw. Disappointed that Luton then went to Newcastle and scored another four goals and got a point. But all we can do is control our own games, and we're still in a situation where looking at our running, particularly some of the home games we've got coming up, I still feel that if we can put a run together at home, we should have enough, regardless of any points being reimbursed or additional points being taken off us, we can still manage to keep our heads above the water. And so, it was also what I enjoyed about Saturday was I'd been to the Aston Villa game. I didn't find that particularly remarkable. I'd watched the Fulham game on TV. Equally, it was pretty unremarkable. Yeah. I actually felt entertained on Saturday for a change. It was a game that swung both ways. And I thought some of the passing from Everton in the first half in particular was close to being of the highest standard I've seen this season. So, a last-minute equaliser always gives you an added buoyancy coming out of the game. Of course, certainly Brathwaite's header did that. But looking back and reflecting on it 24 hours later, I thought it was a very creditable performance. What was your opinion of it then?
Yeah, I find myself... And I thought I've sort of made the point on a couple of the more recent podcasts. I find myself wrestling with the sort of the standard of the play that I think Dyche has made this calculation that given the fact that we're very stretched and the fact obviously we couldn't make any additions in the transfer market, that he's got what he's got and he's going to set the team out to just, number one, be difficult to beat, which is obviously I think we can all agree that he and his staff have done very, very well. I think we're now top of the long ball table, which I think would come as no surprise to anyone. And so as someone, who grew up watching the sort of late 80s team, catching the tail end of the 80s glory and that sort of early 90s team. And this was obviously the time of the crazy gang in Wimbledon. I mean, that kind of, it jars a little bit with my more sort of purist proclivities. But I mean, at the end of the day, as I say, we are where we are. We are very, very stretched. We're clearly missing some key players. I mean, Decore obviously is the one, is obviously the key miss for whatever reason he makes everything tick. And so I think, like you, I agree that we did sort of sit back a bit in the second half, and I think we did resort to the long ball a bit too easily. And we all remember the Newcastle game when we put together a 30-pass move to score a goal. The players can do it. It's there in their makeup. I just think that perhaps sometimes we do sort of fall back on the long ball a bit too easily. And obviously, depending on the opposition, that can be a more profitable tactic than others. I mean, certainly, you know, Calvert-Lewin looks very isolated up there when Doucouré is not there, because Jack Harrison, obviously, for all his endeavor off the ball, he's not sort of the greatest pairing with a striker. But again, he is what we have. And so I think, you know, with Dyche cutting his cloth to what he has, I mean, as long as we keep picking up points, I don't think you can have too many arguments. I think, obviously, longer term, this is a conversation for far down the road, obviously, but I think we'd all like to be playing better football. But right now, survival is of paramount importance. And as you say, and I think I mentioned last week's pod, we do have some games coming up over this last stretch of the season where you would think there are enough points to be gathered. And again, appeals and second PSR charges notwithstanding, that we should be okay. And I think if we can just start finding the net on a regular basis, we'd be away from that bottom three in no time, because of that defensive foundation we now have. I think we're among the top three, is it, for the defensive records in the Premier League, which really is, you know, given the fact that we are so stretched, is quite remarkable.
Yeah, it's very encouraging as well, isn't it, Lyndon? And yeah, I mean, go back to Saturday's game as well. I think, you know, I mentioned before, the substitutions, in my view, kind of had a real positive impact on the game. And I was kind of reflecting at the end of the game that you look at the likes of Lewis Dobbin and Youssef Chimisi, I think, how do they develop as players? Because if they're getting thrown on for 10 minutes at the end of every game, when inevitably we're chasing something, have an equaliser or a winning goal, the press they must be under from the moment they come on. And I just wonder, what's the mindset of these players? They come on in such an intense atmosphere. They know they've got 10 minutes to prove themselves. It's not as if they're playing for the team which rotates squads regularly like Man City can do. Now, Sean Dyche, you know, likes to field a settled 11 week in, week out. He's also not big at making in-game substitutions. So he do looks like such a Missy and Dobbin thing. How do they progress as players? And in terms with Shamisha, I was kind of thinking, might it not have been better to load them back to Sports and listen for 3 months until Christmas, get them up to standard, and then bring them back in January? It seems what we did at Ellison the season before.
Yeah.
And then at least, you know, he's developed a bit as a player. I know it's a difficult decision. I appreciate that. But I was quite impressed with Lewis Dobbin once again. He brought a bit of vibrancy, a bit of energy, and he starts running at the top of defenders at a time when I don't think they're quite expecting that. And his through ball for Chimisi, which he really should have scored from, it really was skillful. It cut the defence open, that they hadn't anticipated it. And you just wonder there, you know, there's a bit of a player there, you know, and you kind of wonder, you know, should he be given more than just 10 minutes, you know, maybe build this up a little bit more? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I was going to ask you whether just you think in general Dyche's substitutions could be made earlier. I mean, I think my personal opinion is, and again, I'm going back to the same argument where I think he's just trying to wring as much as he can out of the players that he knows he can trust, and obviously ones that would be less of a risk. Obviously, the younger players would fall into that category. So I just think that sometimes I'd like him to make earlier changes, but I can understand why he doesn't.
Yeah, likewise, because, you know, the priority, you know, from his perspective is, you know, it's to make sure we don't lose at home, you know,
exactly,
and then we try to get the draw, or even better, try and get the win. But you look at Lex Adob thing, well, in the position where he plays, you don't particularly see him being a risk coming on a little bit earlier in that position, because it certainly added more drive to the attack on Saturday. Because I just thought by that stage, Tottenham were quite comfortable with us, apart from the corner. And even the corner, McNeil was struggling with the corner in the second half, I thought. And he looks, I don't know what you think, but I think he looks absolutely shattered, McNeil.
Yeah.
And you kind of thinking, well, is this serving any purpose, driving him into the ground, given that, you know, the fixtures we have coming up? Might it not be better to give him a bit of a breather, bring somebody else up a little bit longer, and you know, to see what these players can do?
Yeah, Dobbin started at Doncaster, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
Yes, he did. I mean, he played the first half, and he, like Chimiti, they were both removed at halftime, and I think both of them looked out of their depth, honestly, against the lower league team. And so that was my concern about both those players, was are they actually going to be able to make the step up? But I think Dobbin in particular, the few times he's come on recently has looked really, really useful. And maybe that's his role, is that kind of super sub role. But I agree. I think I'd like to see him given a bit more time, maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes to really try and impact something. Because as you say, I like the fact that he's very direct. I don't think we have enough players who are just willing to commit mm-hmm. a player and sort of give them something to think about. And certainly get towards the byline. I think maybe that's my biggest gripe with the team right now is, you know, we don't have any sort of overlaps. We don't get to the byline very, very often. And you can see both of Tottenham's goals came by that route.
Yeah.
It can be very effective. Yeah. Now, obviously, if you're committing fullbacks, you know, the flip side of that obviously is if you get turned over in possession, then you're in big mm-hmm. trouble. And I mm-hmm. think that's a calculation, again, that I think Deitch is making, that he's trying to play as conservatively as he can, try and grind out as many points as we can. But where Chimiti in particular is concerned, I actually am getting the feeling that he might be, and he obviously came on before Beto on Saturday, he might actually be a better like-for-like change for Calvert-Lewin than Beto. And I'd actually be interested. I would like to see him get a few more minutes. I think he's tidier in possession than Beto. I think Beto just gives you that almost unpredictable nature for both us and the opposition, you know. So I think there's definitely a role for him, but I would like to see Chimiti given a bit more time as the man who comes on for Calvert-Lewin, just to see if he can be the difference maker.
Yeah, I'd agree, Lynn. I mean, I think Chimiti's played 23 minutes since the start of the year, and you can think maybe he's been a little bit underutilized there. What I did like about Chimiti as well, In the losing game, I liked the bit he was in a bit of a flare up one the defenders when the ball went out of play. I thought, I like that little bit of aggression. You know,
it shows a bit of an
edge. Yeah, a bit of an edge that I didn't quite realise he had as part of his makeup. So that was quite positive to see. I thought, and Lewis Dobbin once again, I think he's played 60 minutes in total since he scored against Chelsea, and you do kind of wonder, you know, is there a reason for that? You know, surely he could have. You know, You looked at those two cup games against Crystal Palace, and were they not the opportunities to give, you know, Dobbin and Chimiti a bit of a longer run in the team? Because he made the change a bit longer for Pickford, which I 100% supported, because we need a goalkeeper fit and ready Pickford were to get injured. And I just felt that was a wasted opportunity in the cup games to maybe give some of these fringe players, not necessarily to start them, but to give them more time, give them half an hour or so to make an impact.
Yeah, certainly in hindsight, the way things all turned out. But yeah, was it? Dobbin only came on in the 77th minute, I think, against in the replay. And then obviously Chimiti didn't make it on at all. So yeah, I agree. But, you know, I think it's, at the moment, it's just trust Deitch, isn't it? It's all you can all you can really do.
Yeah. I mean, there is no alternative, is there? If once again he keeps us up this season, given the background of you know, the club sale, the financial penalties, the sanctions, etc. Now, you do wonder, come the summer, is he going to have had enough of this thing? I've done 2 years here, you know, trying to manage one hand behind the back.
Yeah.
He would certainly be in demand from lots of other teams. You think of a Crystal Palace, for example, who are probably going to be looking to make a change this summer.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely somebody who would be on certain clubs' radar, especially those clubs who are, you know, I mean, Nottingham Forest, he's got kind of boyhood attachment to Nottingham Forest as well.
That's true, yeah.
So, you know, although he's not everyone's favours, and I totally agree with you about the style of football, having grown up watching that mid-80s team, I'm used to picking the style of Panache and Five and seeing football. But times have changed and we're no longer operating at that level anymore. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that would also be a concern, Max. So I'm not sure how long he's left on his contract, but certainly if we were to stay up, I could see him being in demand for a number of clubs.
Yeah, the new Big Sam, I suppose. The new firefighter. I mean, to be fair to him, there at times when we've had, you know, the majority of the team fit, that sort of mixture of the direct ball. Let's put it that way. Direct ball. You know, the passing game. The counter-attacking game. I mean, all of those were ingredients of that 80s team. You know, that 80s team could pass, you know, put together slick passing moves like the best of them, but they weren't afraid to go direct.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be the sort of ultimate goal that he would go for, you know, when he talks about front foot football and getting it getting it forward as quickly as possible. I mean, that was very much reminiscent of the 80s team. I just think right now that we are resorting to the long ball far too much. And maybe that's on the players as much as it is the manager. You know, I think it's when your kind of backs are against the wall, it's an easy way out, isn't it? Just to relieve some pressure. So
it is. And the worry about that is, once you give the ball away in that situation, you're waiting a long time for it to come back.
Yes.
I was kind of watching, analysing bits of the games on Saturday. There were a couple of cases we've lost the ball in midfield. And it was taking us between 75 and 90 seconds to win it back. And that's a long time when you're behind the game to not have the ball, because without balls, it's a simple matter of fact. You can't do anything without the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
in terms of long ball, I know it's divided by lots of people. I don't understand why, but you know, even watching the Arsenal-Liverpool game at the weekend, they went averse to long balls when they felt they had to do.
Yeah, no, it's always an effective tactic. I think the key to it, obviously, is accuracy. You know, often it's just hoisting up there, and it's meat and drink to the defenders. But certainly, I mean, some of our most productive results have been a ball down the channel that, say, Calvert-Lewin or Doucouré has gone to chase down, and you can set up an attack from there. So, I mean, absolutely, it's a tactic in the Arsenal. But Andy Howard, who unfortunately couldn't make it on this week, but he was there on Saturday, and he posted his top 10 observations of the game to our group chat, and numbers 2 and 3 were as follows. He says, Everton have become a very good side without the ball. Our shape, press, and deep defending are now solid. He says, with the ball, Everton are at a toilet to the point where you can't imagine they worked on, in quotes, the bit where you win it back at all. Bad decisions, weird decisions, awful execution, no obvious out ball. Unlike Spurs, who have athletes running towards the opposition goal in good patterns as soon as the ball is won. And I think there's a lot to that. There's definitely a lot to be said for that. But again, I come back to this caveat of when we have all the personnel that Dyche would want there, I think we are a lot more, we're a lot closer to that than I think we were at times on Saturday.
I think as well on Saturday, it showed how much we'd miss Garner Gay with him being away in the African Cup of Nations. I mean, I don't know about you, I was watching Senegal taking penalties, screaming that they'd lose because they just wanted Garner Gay back here for the top of the game, which is a terrible way to look at things. But I just felt his role on Saturday, I think he played a bit further forward as well. He was winning possession back quite regularly. His distribution was of a decent standard as well. I just felt the team looked more comfortable in the middle of the park with this kind of reassuring, experienced presence there.
Yeah, I've actually got it in my notes. I thought he was brilliant. I think he was terrific. I mean, he came back just when we needed him. And I was wanting, unfortunately, sorry to any Senegalese listeners, I doubt we have any, but yeah, I was hoping that he'd come back as soon as possible because, you know, we really are stretching, particularly in that part of the field. If Onana's not there, Gomez is not there, you know, obviously Doucouré can drop back if needed. It's a part of the field where we really, really need his energy. And I mean, it was an age-defying performance from him, really. I think he was everywhere. So I was really pleased with him. And James Garner is doing, you'd want a bit more from him, I think, creatively, but I think he's doing so much on the other side of the ball that it's really hard to criticize him because he's among one of the top tacklers in the league right now, which obviously it comes as no surprise to anyone who watches us. I think he's doing really, really well as well.
But, I mean, going back to your comparison with the mid-80s team, one of the strengths of the mid-80s team was there were goals all over the midfield, and that's one area where we definitely, I'm looking at Onana in particular, I think we're just not delivering enough goals from those midfield players.
Yeah, it's true. You know, Garner got a couple earlier in the season, didn't he? And I was kind of hoping that would open the floodgates a bit for him because he's certainly got, I mean, he's got a wonderful shot when it's, you know, when he wants to, but yeah, he's not getting into many of those positions. But again, I think Dyche is asking him not to commit himself too far forward, you know, because of the need to keep the defense tight.
Yeah, I think with Garner's lack of pace, you can understand why Dyche is just, why Dyche would have reservations about him pushing too far forward as well.
Yeah. This might follow on really in the same vein, but we've seen Dyche deploy Ben Godfrey at right back recently with Ashley Young and Seamus Coleman unavailable. It seems to me very much in the David Moyes, and sorry to bring him up again, Sam Allardyce mold of sort of putting as many robust, no-nonsense figures in defence. I think against Fulham and Spurs it worked, given the nature of those games and how much we needed to sort of grind out a point. And it might be useful going with him again in that position against Manchester City. But is this something you'd like to see for the remainder of the season? And what do you think it means for Patterson, who's really struggled to sort of make that right-back slot his own, hasn't he?
But when you think, this is Patterson's third season here now.
Yeah.
He was signed by Benitez, wasn't he? And he's yet to nail down that regular right back spot. So
yeah,
it does kind of raise a few questions as to why he's not been able to do that. He didn't nail it down on the Lampard. He's not nailed it down on Sean Dyche. Obviously, I accept when you're competing against Seamus Coleman, that's quite a high standard to follow.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's been quite interesting that. And I suppose from Patterson's point of view, if you're thinking, hang on, I'm a Scottish international, I can't get on the pitch, but there's Ben Godfrey, who's not even a right back, playing out of position, it must put a few question marks in his mind as well. Yeah, Godfrey, I've always felt quite ambivalent about Ben Godfrey. I think at times he's looked a really good player. I think under Ancelotti, we probably saw the best of Ben Godfrey. I'm not underestimating the effect of that injury he received against Chelsea at the start of the previous season, and maybe it's taken a while to come up to recover from that. But I thought on Saturday he had probably his best game for me for a long time. One thing he's always had is pace, and that can sometimes get him out of situations. In some ways, it reminds me a little bit of Kevin Rattler, who could make a mistake, but he had the pace to retrieve the situation. And I can see Adam started Godfrey. He certainly adds another threat from set pieces if he goes forward, because he's a tall defender. He can create havoc in opposition penalty areas. So, you know, that was a definite plus as well. Not convinced about his crossing ability, but maybe he's not on the team for his crossing ability. And I think you made the point before, Lynn, about, you know, Tottenham's fluid fullbacks. I was looking at Undoggy in particular, and he was all over the park. He was in the middle of the park, then the right, then the left, and we didn't quite know how to pick him up. And I can't quite see Ben Godfrey fulfilling that role. But at the moment, if he was to say to me, who would I prefer to be full-back, Godfrey or Patterson, I'd probably come down in favour of Godfrey at the moment. But my first choice would obviously be Seamus Coleman. And you can see when he came on, when Godfrey was substituted, he just brought that experience to the back four again. And I can't recall him being beaten once on the flank by the Tottenham players, you know, when he came on. So what was your thoughts about Godfrey then?
You know, he's not a fullback. You know, and I think we've really seen him in the last... Well, at the times when he's been played, when he's been playing right back, there have been weaknesses in his game that have been really exploited there. But as you say, he's mobile, he's physical, he's got the pace, he's got that recovery pace. And I think that for now, given the situation that we're in, you know, I'm quite comfortable for him being there, because if we're not going to be playing a sort of, you know, a game where overlapping fullbacks are getting to the byline, then I think that, you know, if he's not going to be required to do that, then, and he can't do it, then fine, have him in the team to do, you know, what we need. He's an extra. He's as I say, going back to that Moyes thing, that it's the extra centre half on the field, isn't it? That can really be helpful if you need to. There's a lot I like about Nathan Patterson, and I think he shares this with Godfrey. Some of his spatial awareness and his positioning can be a little bit iffy, but I almost. The way I'm looking at Patterson now is I think he might be more effective doing what Ashley Young did on Saturday. That's playing that right midfield, more of a right midfield role, because he does get forward really, really well. I think his crossing can be good. He's quite good at the sort of playing the triangles, you know, those neat little passes down the right and sort of advancing us down the pitch that way in a way that I don't think Godfrey is. So I think there's definitely a role for him. But yeah, I feel badly for Patterson, because as you said, for him personally, he must be thinking, you know, what do I need to do here? What's the future hold for me? You know, he's still young, and you know, because given where the team currently is, hopefully he's looking at it as a sort of a period of a very choppy period for the club and a very kind of transitional period. That maybe when we come out of it, that he can again try and stake his claim.
I suppose from his personal point of view as well, you know, with Scotland being in the Euros this summer, he'd want to be playing regular football to ensure he's part of that Scottish squad and features in the games there as well. So he, you know, I'm sure I can't see Dice persisting with Godfrey for the rest of the season. I'm sure there will be opportunities for Patterson. I'm looking at the Crystal Palace game thinking that could be a potential game for him to come back into the team if Coleman's not fit as well. But yeah, I say he's young, he's got time on his side. And like Godfrey, he's had two quite serious injuries, so maybe he's never quite built up that level or momentum and that confidence that comes with playing a full season, getting that under your belt.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So what was your view of Ashley Young at the weekend?
I've been a critic of Ashley Young as a right back, but I think he performed very, very well. And again, another age-defying performance. I mean, to think that he's 38 and to put in the level of performance that he did for as long as he was on the pitch, I thought was quite impressive. Obviously, you know, my big concern with him was he was being played sort of back-to-back-to-back in times when we were playing almost three games a week. And it was clear that that was starting to take a toll. I would have liked to have seen a bit more, you know, sort of squad rotation in that respect. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously got the experience, and his conditioning for someone of his age is fabulous. I mean, what did you make of him on Saturday?
Yeah, I'll go along with your assessment there, Lyndon. I thought he played okay against Fulham on Wednesday, Tuesday or Wednesday night. And I thought he played well on Saturday. I think he's more effective in midfield because he doesn't get exposed for his lack of pace sometimes playing there in midfield as well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, playing the short passing game in midfield quite suits well. He's good at covering. He's good at getting back to help out the defence. So, and as you say, I don't think you can play him for 90 minutes because I just don't think he can play at that level for 90 minutes. But, Andy, he's definitely solved a bit of a problem for us in terms of our total lack of options that we've had in midfield this past 7 days or so.
Andy Howes just dropped in.
Andy.
Welcome, Andy.
Hello, everybody. Sorry, Andy. I'm late.
No problem. How was the drive?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. I would say I was reading the unofficial Everton timeline, and that was why I was late. But I was on the road, so sorry I'm late. But the drive back from London was horrific. So,
oh, really?
I'm pleased to be home. Weather-wise, it was horrific.
Yes.
You're all right for once.
Okay, good. Well, we were just finishing talking about the Spurs game. I actually mentioned what you had put in the group chat about your impressions of it. I did sort of numbers 2 and 3 of your top 10 impressions. But yeah, why don't you give us a summary of how you saw the game, seeing as you were there and you got to see it in person?
Yeah, I mean, what was number 2 and 3? Yeah, good side without the ball, yes. And with the ball, something completely different. That sums it up. Right, I'm off. I was actually really impressed for decent parts of that game in terms of how we'd come on. I think watching the game live is different than watching on the telly. And you pick up certain things that you just don't see from a television camera. And you can look at the whole pitch and you can look at the whole picture, really. Mm-hmm. And I was really, you know, just to double down on the point, I was really impressed with how we looked off the ball. I was really impressed with the organisation, regardless of who's playing in what position now. I mean, we had Ben Godfrey at right back. We had Ashley Young playing in front of him. That's not the combination we've seen really much. And it just seemed so organised. And until the point where we got it back. And then you think, well, some of the strange, annoying, awful decisions with the ball are the reason, you know, that we're not, we haven't got more points this season. But overall, I was actually quite impressed. And I was even thinking at 2-1 down, even though it was frustrating. I was thinking at 2-1 down with about 10 minutes to go, okay, I can still take a lot from this, I think. It was one of those days where I would have come away disappointed if we hadn't got the equaliser. But there would have been enough there for me to think, yeah, this is certainly going in the right direction. If this is us down to the bare bones, which we pretty much are in terms of the options available to him, and that's how we play against a side that's certainly well oiled and better in a better place than we are, I was impressed. And and I thought the atmosphere was good. I thought it was a very supportive atmosphere. It could have been a bit flat because of the kickoff time, and also because of the last, you know, the Luton game especially. But I thought the atmosphere was really good. I thought there was a kind of heightened sense of Everton with the placards and with the kind of, you know, that gave it an extra edge, I think. And I mean, the one thing that did really strike me is that the Premier League and the referees have really got themselves into a terrible hole here, because even the most kind of relaxed, mild-mannered Everton fan sitting in Goodison Park on Saturday, some of the decisions you think, crikey, there's something weird going on here. And they've got themselves in a position now where they give a decision against Everton, and it just adds another layer of something onto it. Where usually in the middle of a kind of any average season, you might think, well, you know, we'll get one of those. We might not get that one. But I mean, at the moment I'm sitting there thinking, crikey, is there something in this? What's happening? But that's the other thing that struck me. But all in all, really impressed. Not knowing what you two have said about it, I don't know whether that's completely and utterly kiboshed the whole thing or what, but I was quite impressed.
No, not at all. I think certainly Paul saw it the same way that you did. And I think that we sort of together we've sort of fallen back on, yes, there's certain things that we would like to see from the performance, when we've got the ball in particular, but that, you know, it's a kind of needs must situation. The players are, you know, clearly there's a sort of a lack of confidence in us going forward at the moment, and we're just sort of trying to grind out as many points as possible. And I think you're seeing that reflected in the way that we're playing. I reference the fact that, you know, back in against Newcastle, we put together a 30 pass move and scored a goal, which proves that we can do it when I think all the right pieces are in there and the confidence is up. You know, I just think we need a run of results. I think is going to help a few wins on the back.
I think back we used all of our passes up for about 3 months. That's the problem.
Yes.
In that one move. Shame they couldn't have balanced out a little bit.
Yes.
But no, you're right. It's possible. It's possible.
It is possible. Yeah.
It got to the point on Saturday where I was sitting next to a bloke I'd never met before, and we were both saying the same thing. It's as if when they win the ball back, it's as if they haven't actually thought about what the next bit is sometimes. And I know that's not the case. It's a Premier League football club. Of course they would have worked on what happens when they get the ball. But at a certain point you think, how much are they working on this? Because, you know, it's compared to Spurs. And I know they're in a better place. I know they've got a better squad. I know they've got, you know, had a little bit longer
time.
They're
a good team.
But, you know, when they get the ball, you've got lots of people on the same page, and when it clicks, you can see why they score a lot of goals. But I always felt there was a chance. I always felt that the way Spurs play, especially with us off the ball looking quite good, they play it from the back, and I don't think they're that good at it yet. I always felt there was a chance in that game, and it turned out there was. But no, it was a positive day, I think.
What was your you can both sort of chime in. What your reactions to the goal, given the whole VAR thing? I mean, could you allow yourself to celebrate properly? Because this is obviously there's a very good article by Matt Jones in The Echo about this. How do you properly celebrate goals anymore?
Well, it kind of takes away from the match-going experience, doesn't it? Like Andy, I was there on Saturday, and your first reaction is you instinctively you celebrate, but then you stop yourself because your first thing, you look at the screen, you look at the referee, and then there's this kind of 30, 40 seconds where you're waiting to see if a decision is being made or not. And you referenced before, Andy, about the officiating on Saturday. And Chris Wilder's comments after the Crystal Palace game came to mind as well. And I just kind of thought that, you know, this is not going to go in our favour here. So I was delighted. But I just think that the delay in giving decisions really is working against the match going experience. And I said to you before, and then, I pay my season ticket. I pay a reasonable amount of money for it. I should know what the VAR decision is before the guy watching at home in his chair or on BT or Sky Sports.
Yeah, you should.
You look at other sports such as cricket and rugby union, rugby league, and the crowd kind of know what's happening and why the decision is being given. And I just find it incredibly frustrating that we're not allowed to even to have any indication of what's going on and why it's going on. So it has kind of detracted from the match-going experience. I know one of the guys who sits next to me, he doesn't celebrate goals anymore. He just sits there and waits for me to tell him, yeah, it's being given. And that's all wrong at every level.
I completely agree. And I have been to games with VAR. I've been to Everton games at Goodison Park with VAR. But that was, Saturday was when it really did hit home to me that maybe it's the first one I've been to where we'd scored and it was like kind of all or nothing, wasn't it, at the end? It was either we'd got or we hadn't. Yeah. And it was everything. We were standing there for, what I don't know what it was, Paul. Was it 2-3 minutes where they made that decision at the end?
It seemed a lot longer, but I think you're right, Andy, yeah.
And you thought to yourself, well, this is everything that's wrong with the game.
Yeah.
Because football is a low-scoring sport. There are very few of these moments, if any moments, like that in a game. You know, you might get a 0-0. And to have that moment completely curtailed, really. I mean, yes, I did jump up and down. And yes, I saw the goal go in the... I saw the ball go in the net. But there was all... Then your mind kind of goes into 100 miles an hour... overdrive, because you're thinking, well, Branthwaite did end up in the back of the net with a goalkeeper. That could be a problem. It hit somebody in the middle. Well, who did it hit? And
yeah, exactly.
You know, and I don't know. It's just, it does, it massively changes the experience. And I'll be completely honest, it changes the experience. It made me enjoy it far less than I would have if we just look. You always glanced across at the assistant, didn't you? And if the flag hadn't gone up and the referee wasn't pointing the wrong direction, you knew. And it's just, it's a second, you know, it's not even that. And now it's not, I've said this before, but it's not the game I fell in love with. And a lot of it is, a lot of it still is, but the big bits now, you're right, you can't celebrate them. And if you can't celebrate a goal, I don't know really what you can celebrate, really.
Exactly.
And
it's the bedrock of the sport.
it does, yeah. It just takes away the moment. Football's about moments. It's also a fast-changing game, football. You know, we talk about other sports that have got technology. The swing of the game doesn't change as much as football does. I mean, you could be one down one end defending a corner and up the other end in 7 seconds and scoring a goal. And it's that kind of speed and you know, the fluidity of football, which is what's so brilliant about it. And this just seems to just put a huge, great comma in the middle of a sentence that doesn't need to be there. And it does take away from it. And, you know, if I was like Paul and paying every week effectively to go to watch the games, I'd be really thinking about what sport I'm watching, you know, these now. And that's such a shame. That's awful to say that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really good point, Sandy, because I go to watch Tranmere Rovers occasionally. I go to watch my local non-league team, Marine, occasionally. And what you like about those experiences is when a goal is scored, you can celebrate it. You're not worried about a VAR decision, you're not looking at the officials. And it's the match experience that the likes of you, I, and Lyndon grew up with. You went to a match. If it was offside, you knew it was a sense because the flag was raised. But it didn't have this long, prolonged debate about whether it's a goal or not. I mean, I don't know about you, Lyndon. Obviously, you have access to NFL, which, you know, on a regular basis.
Yeah.
They seem to have the technology to be far more efficiently operating than what we have at the moment.
They do, and the process is much more transparent. And I think what they benefit from is also they have a number of officials on the field, which I think helps. It's not just one person's opinion, or, you know, and for whether that's a biased opinion, is it a corrupt opinion? You know, it's all these allegations that we're all starting to throw at it now because we're so frustrated. There's a number of them who congregate and they hash it out together and they make a decision. And if necessary, they'll go to the monitor. And then the umpire the referee will come back on the field and he'll, you know, click his button and he'll tell the crowd what the decision is. And I mean, for the most part, I mean, obviously they have some contentious ones. And I think in this last season, there was a very contentious one where, you know, they got the decision wrong. But for the most part, there is a level of trust in the process that I just, at the moment, does not exist at all in the Premier League. And I think the damage that's being done to the integrity of the league and the image of the league, it just surprises me that they're not taking greater steps to address this. That the semi-automated offside technology exists. The ability to mic the referees up to address the stadium obviously exists. They do it in rugby union very, very well. You know, the ability to speed up the decisions, I think they just have to. But I think first and foremost, they could just take a step back and involve the referee, the VAR, a lot less. You know, it has to just scale it back to the most critical decisions and the ones where there's clearly either an error's been made, or it's just such a tight call that you need a couple of extra eyes on it. It just seems to be far too intrusive, and this accusation that they're re-refereeing games, I feel like that now. I feel like either the referee on the field is going to defer a difficult decision because the VAR will have a look at it, and you know the heat's not on me. Rather than make a sort of a judgment call on the field, I just let it go. And then you've obviously got the situation where the people in the VAR room don't want to go against their mate on the field because it's, you know, they've got to go back and have tea with them, obviously, or whatever, at Stockley Park the next week. Whatever the reason is, I think, you know, that a situation that we had before that was very much based on human error and human considerations, you've got human considerations that are now affecting it in a different way, and it's not any better. So I think it just needs to be completely reformed, and I'm surprised that the Premier League seems to be so resistant to making it more transparent. I mean, them going on Sky Sports to talk about an incident that happened 2 months ago, I mean, that's not transparency. That's just lip service, you know, to me. I think it just needs to be far more transparent.
I agree completely. I'm lucky enough to commentate on some games, and I did the Bristol Rovers Oxford game in League One a couple of weeks ago. And it was like kind of what Paul was aiming at getting at. It was so liberating because obviously I'm a commentator, so I'm not celebrating as such. But even from my point of view, like I can explain what's happened. And yes, it's a goal quite easily. And it's obvious that it's either been given or it's not. But then it was lovely looking around. Like Bristol Rovers won that game. And it was a big game. And you just look around and the fans are like, some Rovers fans were turning around to their mates, but how could you ever turn around? Because you can't turn around when there's VAR, because you can't let yourself kind of be in the moment, because you might look like a bit of an idiot in 3 minutes' time when it's all. I mean, I think if Branthwaite's goal had been disallowed for whatever reason, I don't know what would have happened there, because that would have been the biggest cherry on the icing on the cake, wouldn't it? For everything that's going on.
Yeah,
it's just so liberating without it. And that says it all, really.
Yeah. Final thoughts on the Spurs game. We were chatting, Paul and I, about the Ben Godfrey, Nathan Patterson, that right back role. Any thoughts on that? And also Ashley Young's performance?
I thought Godfrey did okay.
Yeah.
Both goals came from that area, which is what I would say. Whether that was directly down to him, I don't know. But I think there was a marked difference when Coleman came on, just in terms of how much. I don't know, just someone playing in their specialist position just makes a huge difference, I think. And someone with a bit of experience like he's got, obviously he won't have the pace of Godfrey, especially against some of those Spurs players who are quick, but he just kind of knows where to be and what to do. And I just think it showed. I'm a bit worried for Nathan Patterson, if I'm completely honest, because if he's not playing now, then when is he going to? I don't know. As for Young, I mean, just to cut that story short, I'd still pick Coleman. I'd still pick Coleman every week if he was fit.
Yeah.
As for Young, I thought he did well. I've not seen an awful lot of Ashley Young, especially in the flesh. I thought he did what he had to do quite well. He was in the right position off the ball. He put in some cracking balls into the box, and I think there's that kind of appreciation from whoever's running into the box that the ball was going to come in. And you can tell he hadn't played there an awful lot, because if he's doing that every week, you'd think someone would be gambling on the fact that he's going to do it. I think he's, you know, maybe he's got a little bit more quality than the players that have been playing there from that area. I thought he did well. I didn't think he was outstanding, but I thought he did well. And it just gives us another option, doesn't it? It gives us somebody else that can play out there, who Deitch obviously will trust to play there. I did think Dobbin looked quite bright when he came on. And I was saying to the guy next to me, I didn't actually get his name. I should have got his name. We had a lovely chat. He was very weathered by the whole thing. He'd been there every week for the last few years, and he was telling me, "Oh yeah, they'll do this in a minute." Oh yeah, he was quite tired of the whole thing. I was kind of fresh and hey, this is great. But he was saying that with Young playing there, and it just gave us a chance to move things around, or an option anyway. And the players, I mean, we were both saying, but if Dobbin came on, if Spurs play that high line, all it needs is one good clip over the top.
Right, yeah.
And it kind of worked a bit. I thought he looked quite bright. I don't know whether he's ever going to play kind of 90 minutes in the Premier League for us, but it was nice to see him come on. But no, Young was fine. Young was fine. And if it allows us to be slightly more kind of, if it allows him to spread the load, you know, it's, what was our, did Young and Coleman ever play together down the right? I don't think they did. I would love to have totted that age up.
a lot. No, a I lot. Don't think they did.
But no, I think they both came out of the game with credit.
Yeah. And your comments about Dobbin more or less reflect what Paul and I were saying. He's a useful, definitely a useful super sub.
But, yeah.
On to Saturday then. I'm not too sure that there's much to say about this one. I mean, Pep Guardiola has Haaland back, De Bruyne back, Foden scoring hat-tricks. They're back within 2 points of Liverpool at the top, so they're not about to ease off the pedal. And yet, thanks to Damari Gray wonder goal at the end of 2022, we snagged a point in this fixture last season. So I guess we don't travel without hope. Do we?
Well, you always have to travel with hope. And I think also from that game you referred to there as well, Lyndon, Ben Godfrey did a really good job of winding up Haaland during the game.
That's true,
as well.
He did. That's
so,
very true.
So that might just merit his inclusion in the side again, just to knock Haaland off his stride.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, we're going to sort of get anything from the game, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think, two things to consider. I think, one, if we lose, I don't lose heavily, because I'm quite concerned that Luton's goal difference is getting closer to ours at the moment. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, there's quite a significant gap between the two teams. I just think we go there, we sit back, we try and hit them with set pieces, and we, you know, if we can somehow claw the point from that game, that'll be fantastic. I know I'm kidding myself here, but you're a football fan, you have to have hope, don't you? Or maybe we get a lucky break in the first 5 minutes or so. I think one thing about City and when we played the Gunners early in the season, at one each, you know, the game was evenly balanced, and it was the penalty decision that turned the game in City's favour. So Dice obviously had a way of playing in that game that was quite effective. Now, I'm sure he's learned from that. I'm sure it's going to be a kind of repetition of those tactics. So I don't want us to go there and lose heavily, but if we can go there, hang in, restrict their chances, limit them to maybe shots from outside the box, and maybe from a set piece conjure something, then there's the outside chance we might get something. But realistically, I'd be quite happy to lose 1-0, 2-1, and look towards the Crystal Palace game, which in terms of our season, to me, the Crystal Palace game is one of the matters. I can take it, beat Man City. We absolutely have to get 3 points off Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I was going to try and be positive as well. And I don't know what else I can throw it apart from Liverpool. I mean, I never like saying things are a free hit. I think this one is. I really do. I mean, we don't expect anything from the fixture. They are coming on strong again, as they always do at this time of year. One thing I will say is we have played well away from home this season. And we've been able to use what tools we have effectively away from home, where sometimes at home we haven't been able to use those same tools. I think I'm coming to the end now of the positives. But I mean, you know, could be on your wildest dreams. Could you see Everton getting a point? Of course you could. Of course you could. A lot has to go our way. And it has to stay nil for a little bit longer than it did Saturday. Because I think if the same thing happens at the Etihad, we will have a different result. But, you know, if we came away with a point, that would be magnificent. I think it's really important, like Paul said, that if we are going to lose the game, that we don't lose it heavily. Because Luton have got Sheffield United, haven't they?
Yeah.
So why are we... This was the other thing that really got to me. It really got to me on Saturday. We were driving home because we came home after the game and we called in to get some food to eat in the car on the way home. And I turned on the radio and it said, and Luton are 4-2 up. And I felt all of those emotions of the last two seasons just flooding back through my body. And my partner said, Coy, you look quite stressed about that. And I said, I shouldn't be. I should not be stressed about a Luton game in February. This is not where I should be in my life. But it just brought all of those memories back of kind of, oh, what are they doing? Who have they got? Oh, he's injured. He's not. Oh, my God. Anyway, it might get a little bit worse before it gets better, I think. I expect them to beat Sheffield United the way they're playing, but even if they get a point, I think we've got to accept it might get a point or two worse before we then have a chance to get some of these points back. As the table stands at the moment, obviously by the time this all happens, by the time Crystal Palace come to town, we may be in a different position altogether by then. Who knows? But in terms of the way it looks now, it could be a bit of a scary weekend for looking at the table, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with all of basically what you've said. I think there's opportunity, you know, because they obviously play a high line. Not that we're the greatest on the break at the moment without Doucouré, but you know, obviously there's always a chance if you can get Calvert-Lewin or say Harrison sprinting away behind the defense. We've obviously got the set piece threat. The way that you know we've been set up away from home, we've certainly done well this season. I suppose my concern of sort of dreaming of a repeat of last time is that with Dwight McNeil sort of being off form right now, and I think what's going on in his personal life, I imagine, is what is playing into that right now. I think he's clearly got other issues that are affecting his form. I mean, without him sort of being on form and without Jack Harrison really sort of looking confident at sort of shooting from long range, I don't really see there's anyone in the team who can kind of repeat what Damari Gray did. So I think we may be looking more at this kind of the set piece threat, which is fine. I mean, at the moment, you know, however the goals go in, I don't care. We just need to score some goals. But yeah, I agree. It's going to be tough. And I think, yeah, if we can limit the damage, then obviously the Crystal Palace game is the more important one. And honestly, the more time goes on, Luton are probably the team that we won't be concerned with as much as the Palaces, the Forests, and maybe Brentford. I think Brentford with Tony in the side. I think Brentford have got too much because they've got Ivan Tony. But Palace, and there's rancor off the field. They've got injuries piling up. Forest have obviously just lost Chris Wood. They may have a points deduction. I mean, obviously this whole, as you say, Andy, by the time the Crystal Palace game rolls around, we may have a decision from the appeal. And we may be in a different position altogether. You know, we may be looking at even worse because of the second charge. We may be looking better because we've got some points back. Who knows? But certainly, whatever happens, our chances of picking up points are far more likely against Palace on the 19th. But I mean, neither of you were on the last part where I asked the fellas about the appeal and whether you thought that we might get anything back. Do you have what are your spider senses telling you will happen based on nothing at all?
Well, based on us being Everton, I'm expecting absolutely nothing to happen. And things will stay as they are. Or by some miracle, we get 4 or 5 or 6 points back and then we lose them again on the second sanction at the end of the season. So I have no optimism at all about this outcome. So I'm sure Lawrence Rabinovic will do a superb job in terms of representing the club and could end up getting himself hero status and the permanent place on the Toffee timeline if he gets those points rescinded, but we'll have to wait and see.
See, based on absolutely nothing, obviously, I'm kind of the other way. Well, maybe it's because I'm, as I've said on this pod before, I'm naive. that I think at some point there has to be some common sense applied, because what's coming down the road for the Premier League is potentially much bigger than Everton and Forest being in a bit of trouble. I just think at some stage somebody has to have some common sense. And I don't know why I think that again, that's based on absolutely nothing because there's been none so far. But I still don't see, fundamentally, I still don't see how you can punish a member of an association or a club for something that's in the rules, but you never said what the punishment is. I still don't know how you can enforce something that you've made up. Now, maybe I'm naive, but surely a really good lawyer is going to pick that apart. I don't know. I know he was there on Saturday, wasn't he?
Yes, I was going to ask, did you see him?
I didn't. I can't give you any body language kind of inside information.
He had a big smile on his face from the pictures I saw.
But... Yeah, true.
I think that was just his newfound celebrity, I think.
I don't know. I have a sneaky feeling that we may get something back. And therefore, it might... Well, we could end up where we are now, couldn't we? If let's say we get half the points back and we also get done for half the points in the next one, we could be kind of back to a hole.
Yes. That's my feeling. That would be my guess. If I were to put money on it, I would say we get five of them back, and then they, or four of them back, and then they just tack them back on.
Or maybe I have a sneaking suspicion they may use a suspended punishment, which I think actually would be quite clever.
Yes.
In the circumstances.
Yeah.
And again, we've not seen much clever come out of that organisation for a while, but. That would strike me as a kind of a, okay, you've been very naughty boys, and if we see a similar thing in the next few years, then this is going to be bad. I can understand that might work, but I don't know. I've almost got myself out of the automatic thing that I was doing to begin with was, oh, yeah, but actually we're 12th. Oh, yeah, but actually we're 11th. I haven't thought like that for about 3 or 4 weeks.
No, me neither.
It's kind of gone back, as I was saying about the Luton, the Luton effect. It's kind of gone back to that, oh, we really are 18th, aren't we? but you're right. I don't think Luton are the ones we're going to be chasing. I think there are a few teams there that we can quite easily chase down. And Palace... I'm hoping the floor falls out of Palace, because what are they, 5 points ahead of us? But we've got them coming up. That could be taken down to 2, and then I think it's anybody's really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks, fellas. Enjoy the chat. Fingers crossed. The pod will be back next week to discuss Everton having taken something from the Etihad like we did last season. If you haven't checked out Paul Traill's account from his visit to Everton HQ at the Royal Liver Building to see the new hospitality offerings that will be at Bramley Moor Dock on toffeeweb.com, do give that a read and listen to the accompanying podcast. On a personal note, my first Everton book that I co-wrote with Steve Dickinson, entitled The Unofficial Everton Timeline, The Mashiri Years, is officially released on Wednesday, the 7th of February. It's part reference book, part historical narrative on the past 8 years under Farhad Mashiri, and it's available on Amazon in Kindle and paperback. And if you enjoy reading my stuff on TuffyWeb, it'll certainly feel familiar. And it would mean the world if you picked up a copy, left a review on Amazon to get the book some exposure. While you're there, why don't you grab yourself a copy of Paul's book, The Forgotten Champions, about Everton's 1987 title-winning side, which, when I search for the unofficial Everton timeline on Amazon, is the next result down. So, I mean, it just makes sense, really. You just have to do it. You can get Paul's book in hardcover for just £11.55 right now. Highly recommend it. Anyway, enough pitching. Until next time, Blues, thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. And, of course, up the Toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.